Good morning. I'm trying to do the hit the glass, but it's going. Good morning. We'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, September 20th, 2012. We'll begin this morning's meeting by excusing the Vice Mayor, who has had to be working this morning, so he won't be able to join us. And then we'll start with the first item on the agenda, which is to hear a presentation. Oh, got to review the agenda for next Monday's council meeting. Okay, if everyone's there, page 2, item 3A, Councilman. Oh,
as you would know it. Yeah, I couldn't get another word out of your mouth. 3A is, I have a question about 3A. Anyone here from the Parks, Recreation, and Facilities District? Oh, there, great. Good morning. Lovely to see you, Mr. Hirschberg. Hey, I just said, this just brought up a question. We're buying motors. They're all greatly priced and stuff, competitive. But the question I wondered is, you know, we have a, I guess I don't understand how the contract works with the golf course. So somebody manages the golf course for us, but we buy the equipment for them to use to manage that. So I'm confused.
No.
Okay.
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, the contractor runs the pro shop and the lesson program. We and the restaurant also. The city maintains the course and provides all those services.
Okay. And that's how most of the contracts with cities do? Most cities do similar?
They vary from city to city, but that's been a great model for us and has shown to be proven and has met cost recovery goals and been very beneficial for both the contractor
and usually the golf pros, that's what they their do. Expertise is kind of on that revenue side, and then we kind of bring in, and it allows Mark on the maintenance side also to allow him to use crews back and forth, not he does have some specialty at the golf courses, but he can use some other parks and other areas too.
Okay,
so.
Thank you.
And also, just on those mowers, whenever possible, we try to cascade those to different uses as we're purchasing new ones.
And the great thing, I think there's been some recent articles on some other cities who have had huge issues with their golf courses and that they're money pits, and we've never really experienced that here. As you said, our golf courses are in our enterprise fund. We treat them as a business. We privatize the management of the pro shop, things that are require expertise, and they've been good for the city of Mesa. That accurate statement?
I would agree.
Thank you. Okay, page 3, items 3B and 3C.
Another item 3B.
Councilmember Higgins.
I thought it's yours too. I just want we're talking about workout equipment, and I did not know we had workout equipment in the solid waste division. So what, but just in general, and maybe you can answer it. How many people are required to work out daily in the city? Do you know? Because I know it's a requirement for firefighters per their gig.
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, I don't know that we know the exact number of how many people are required to work out. I know that as part of our wellness program in solid waste, not only in talking to Waste Management and Republic, but in looking at the studies, when drivers sit in a truck for that long, a period of time each day, it's core fitness and cardio fitness greatly reduces their accidents and greatly reduces their individual injuries. So we added it to solid waste for their wellness.
And did we ever look at, where can we pull out claims, the average person working in a desk situation, which is most of us at the city, if you all of a sudden your neck or your shoulders hurt, you're not calling workman's comp claim. You're just going to the doctor. But that's actually an issue because you're sitting all day at a desk. So do we ever look at, putting a wellness program in for all employees to help reduce those kind of things too? Or is there not data that we can glean from that?
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, we are actually currently looking into a wellness center for the entire city to provide a bunch of different services, anywhere from a minute clinic to actual wellness center. So we are actually going through that process right now. Our employee benefits task force has been looking at it, and we're getting to the point that we believe we, in the near future, may be able to go out to RFP for some of those services in a phased-in approach.
And one last question. Have we ever actually looked at what it would cost for those people that need to work out to actually have a gym membership in the area? Because 20 years ago we didn't have a gym every 2 miles from a fire station. Now we do. So is it possible that it could be cost effective for that crew to actually go to the gym every day?
I know we have looked at it from time to time. I know that in solid waste, we looked at particularly our program also brings someone in from the outside to teach our drivers how to strengthen their core and to go through this cardio specific to what they do. So our program actually brought someone in, and we did not want to just send them to a gym. We wanted them to learn things specifically to help them out in this situation. I know we've compared it from time to time. In this case, it was a whole wellness program we were doing in solid waste.
So for fire, have we looked at that? Because I know that some gyms will do a deal for the firehouse. So, you know, one set of four, what do you call it, memberships, but A shift can use it, B shift can use it, and C shift can use it,
yeah.
Which is...
Mayor and Council, I know it's come up. I don't know how much detail we've ever gone into a deep end, so...
Councilmember Higgins, Mayor, we do have it at some of our facilities, stations where we have close proximity and we have very small workout rooms for them. The problem is that, one, we do have some group memberships where we get a really good price. Others, we don't. The other problem we face is that we'll get a membership and these places will close down and then we don't have anything. So we are looking at that. In fact, we're, just as John was saying with the city, we're looking at our whole wellness program in the fire department. This contract that we have right now, we were able to lower our cost considerably. We're still looking at ways to lower that cost so we can pass on savings to the citizens. So we're looking at all those avenues, including the memberships.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank
Councilman Richens?
Yeah, don't go yet.
Can I raise my seat up, please?
Is this coming from the general fund or from the Employee Benefits Trust to pay for this? And does fire pick up the cost of their equipment? Does solid waste pick up their equipment and their budget? How does this work?
It's general fund dollars. This each department budgets annually. For example, Parks and Recreation, this is replacement equipment at the multi-gen center. So we just, as we need to replace treadmills or strength equipment, whatever the case is, we're budgeting that on an annual basis, just like the other departments.
For the general.
Correct.
Yeah, but the solid waste program picks up their equipment costs and the fire picks up their equipment costs, right?
Correct.
In their own budgets.
Correct. Solid waste came out of their budget, and we're hoping to see that in the reduced time off costs.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is that this is not an amenity or a benefit. This is self-serving for us. We have, in solid waste, for example, we have drivers that are that core fitness, like you said, it reduces accidents, it reduces costs for us. So in many ways, this is a dual benefit thing. It's certainly beneficial to the employee, but we get a huge benefit from it, just like we do in the fire. You know, we want to have fit firefighters and police officers because they provide better service. Oh, they also personally are in a better situation. Is that?
That's exactly now. Since we went through with solid waste, was trying to figure out exactly how that would help us out, and it was a benefit to them and provided them with a healthier lifestyle, and it provided us with economic savings.
And it's a lot cheaper to do this, and, well, when I say cheaper, not money-wise, but having solid waste drivers have accidents, not be able to provide the highest level of service, there's a real cost that's involved in that.
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Page 4, items 3D and 3E. Items 3F through 4A. Councilmember Higgins?
Item 3G. We're talking about cameras and stuff. And I guess my question is, I know that in the last few years you guys came forward and we bought cool little camera systems that we can put down manhole covers and float down the line to find out if there's cracks or whatever. So are they similar things, and how come we can't use those, or are they doing different things?
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'll give you just a quick brief history here on why we're doing the project to begin with. Over the last few years, there's been a trend across the country of finding situations where boring contractors have bored gas line through sewer services, and then the sewer service plugs, the homeowner calls out a cleaning service, the cleaning service takes out the gas line, and we have a very serious life safety accident occurring. Over the years, we have bored in gas lines, and our energy department wants to go back and check those to make sure we don't have any of those situations, and if we do, get them fixed before they're an issue. So we have years of gas lines we've put in, and we really have a pretty heavy workload to go back and look at all those service connections and figure out where things were. We talk to utilities about using their equipment, but they're pretty gainfully occupied with their equipment. They're pretty booked up. And we really need to get in and get this done in a very short time frame to get caught up. Now, in the future, every contract we do with a boring contractor, they will be required to do this for us as part of all new projects. But this is the backward-looking stuff. And in addition, this contract is more than just the video inspection. If they can't, sometimes it's very hard when you analyze sewer videos to see things clearly. And if there's any question, they will then go back in and electronically locate the lines and make sure that we actually know where the sewer services are. But that's kind of what we're doing.
Great. Thank you.
It took me a while to figure out what you meant by boring contractors.
They're not talking about
I didn't know we were getting into personalities here with our contract. Is this part of this new job order costing thing?
Yeah.
How exciting ones. They are?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wondering. A little confused a little bit. Thank you. Anything else, 3G and 4A? Going backwards. Oh. Yes, Ms. Lewis.
Yes, thank you, Mayor.
Is this confessional or what are we doing here?
I'd like to just clarify very quickly for the council why we're bringing 4A to you for action. And 4A has to do with gating a single alley. The existing process right now and policy that was directed by the City Council is to abandon alleys to neighborhoods when we want to gate them. And that means that we're transferring ownership of the alley itself to those directly adjacent neighborhoods. And it also requires a petition process whereby you receive 100% of the directly impacted neighbors to agree with the process to move forward. This particular neighborhood has been experiencing issues for quite some time. They've been going through that abandonment process. They've not been successful at gaining the 100% of the signatures required. And in the meantime, we've had some discussions with the City Council. You might recall back in the times when we were going through the Mesa Drive discussion that we had an updated legal opinion that we could actually gate alleys without abandoning them. And so staff has used the summer months to do some research, and our plan and approach is to discuss the possibility of gating alleys for all of the alleys citywide. But we're bringing that conversation and that more thorough discussion to the Community and Cultural Development Committee sometime in October. But in the meantime, this neighborhood has struggled and they've been frustrated, and Councilmember Glover has been working with them. And so we felt it was a good idea to just go ahead and not make them wait any longer and bring this forward and get council direction to go ahead and gate this alley before a formal discussion by the council takes place on a citywide basis.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you. And I think one thing to remember is the alleys belong to the city, right?
That's correct.
That's why we abandon them. I think some people forget, and I know some of the neighbors, although there are easements in the alleys for utilities and other things, basically the alleys are city, they're like a street.
They're public right-of-way.
They're like right-of-way. Which is why we have to abandon them. So we do have the prerogative to go in and control that that alleyway.
We do.
And that's what we're doing here is what you're saying. We're being proactive.
Normally
we defer to the neighborhood under the normal program. We defer to the neighborhood, and if they ask us to abandon, we look at it, and then we'll try to accommodate them. In this case, what we're saying is the problems are significant enough that we're being proactive and taking action before the normal process is completed.
We're being proactive, taking action, allowing this neighborhood to gate their alleys before we discuss it on a citywide basis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Page 5, items 4B through 6B, and I think we're going to have a presentation on 4B and 4C, so we'll wait for that. La Masita?
Yeah.
That's the next item on the agenda. So we'll cover 4B and 4C during the presentation. Items 6C through 6F.
I didn't catch that you had said something about 6B already. I got
6B.
Confused between 4B and 6B. Do we have anybody from planning here?
Oh, Mr. Wesley.
John's not here, so. I had not heard of this case at all. It's in my district, and there was considerable angst in the neighborhood about it, and just kind of curious if it got resolved and if everybody's on the same page now, or are we going to have a bunch of people show up at council meeting upset about this?
Councilmember Richens, you're asking about 6B?
Yeah, Z12-36.
Okay. The applicant has worked with the neighbors, and some of the concerns that the neighbors originally had have been resolved. There was some confusion as to how many lots were being created, and that was what created concerns with the neighbors. But the applicant worked with them, explained that they were really only creating three lots and a street that will be a cul-de-sac to provide access to those new lots. And it looks like some of those concerns have subsided. We did have some neighbors that attended the planning and zoning hearing and did express some concern. Their concerns had to do mostly with additional traffic in the area and wanted to request that speed bumps be considered through Quince.
I didn't understand why you guys allowed that dead-end cul-de-sac in the new development and not a loop road that connects in with, I think it's Mallory Street or one of the other streets.
Councilmember Richens, there is a parcel that is being accepted that is an exception.
Right, that little triangle. The access to that's pretty tough.
Right, so I believe they didn't have complete access all the way over. And in working with our development planning staff, it was determined that this was acceptable.
If they own the parcel all the way through to the other street, I just don't understand why a cul-de-sac is going in this instance.
So maybe it would be good. It sounds like we need to spend some time with you, Councilor Richards.
Yeah,
so why don't we give us till Monday, and if we have a chance to meet and visit about that, if not, maybe we can reschedule this to another date, if that's to get
yeah,
to make sure you're
that,
comfortable.
That might be a good
okay.
idea. I had never seen or heard anything
okay.
about this.
So
before.
Why don't we have staff get with you? And
given the comments and the report
sure.
and everything.
No. Let's make sure you're comfortable. And
I want to make sure the neighbors are comfortable.
And then if
well.
We need to do a, we could not postpone, what do we call it? Reschedule of the agenda, we can do that on Monday.
And if we could, this raises a question. We have not had a whole lot of zoning cases come before us in the last 4 years. And now we're starting to get some, and there's, especially on, there's reuses and some of the zonings. I know there's one going through that I don't know anything about other than what I've read in the paper about upzoning, downzoning, all these kind of things like
right.
that.
And
because of the change in economic conditions, if the planning and zoning staff, I know we have a process, but sometimes when things are well before the P&Z, we start getting cards and letters from constituents about specific for which we have absolutely no idea what's going on. And so if there's a way you could at least give us the basics or contact this, certainly the council member in the district. Sometimes the applicant doesn't, to their detriment, come in and meet with the council member or anyone before it goes before, and then we're sort of caught in a weird position because we can't talk about a case because we know absolutely nothing about it. So if as going forward, I think we're going to get more and more of these, especially where the neighbors will be involved. If you could make sure that certainly the council member in whose district the property is has a good understanding and maybe let the others know so when we start getting these constituents come in and start talking to you about it, we can at least say, hey, listen, I'm up to speed on it, but let it go through the process and we'll talk to you at a certain time. Does that sound
absolutely.
Okay?
We will yeah. set up a process to make sure that we notify you. We actually have a pre-application, pre-submittal process, and if it works, we can work with your council assistants and just give them a heads up when those cases first come through so you know what's moving through the process.
Yeah,
and then
I think
got
the ones
questions
I'm thinking too. About are the ones where you, from day one, know you have community or neighbor mm-hmm. involvement, where there are people who are, for whatever reason, opposing it or questioning it, let us know so that we're at least we at least know what's happening, and if we need more information, we can ask you.
We will certainly do that.
Yeah, we used to send out we used to have a listing of all.
Yeah,
the
you did,
running.
And but
we
I,
do.
Okay, I'm telling you, yeah, you do. I'm not criticizing. We just are not used to.
We
this
will
yet.
Reinvigorate that,
and
process.
Then we can highlight in there the ones yeah. we know where we're getting some public.
Yeah, comments. And then there's some. If you've gotten a lot of feedback, reach out to the council member in that district okay. because we're just not used. You know, in the previous world, these things came up every month. And
right.
so it was just an ongoing process. We're transitioning, and it's a good thing that we have zoning cases, because that means there's activity out there. But on the other hand, this is a new experience for this council. And also, my guess is a lot of these zoning cases are going to create conflict because we're going, you know, we're also increasing density.
Right.
We're doing infill where we have parcels of land that have not been used ever, and now all of a sudden, that's going to create conflict because there's going to be people who don't like that.
Right.
It'd be nice if we got a briefing or information as early as possible so we can respond to it, or at least be aware of it.
The other issue on this I wanted to understand was the half street. We're requiring the half street improvement in the cul-de-sac, and that half street runs along the backside of the lots that face the street ahead of it. And there is virtually very little possibility that other piece of half street will ever be developed. And we have a lot. There's a few of those in my neighborhood and other neighborhoods in West Mesa that have these half street improvements that are never going to happen with the rest of it. And we got to figure that out. I mean,
We will follow up and set a meeting with you to talk about this one and then kind of the rest of the process.
Thank you.
Okay.
And another thing, if you could do, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to have Councilor Finter, if an applicant comes in, encourage them to go meet with their, early in the process, their council member in
the
district.
We typically do that.
I know, and I do that too, and it's to their benefit to include the people on this council in as early as they can, because I think there's a lot of ways we can help navigate the system before they even get to P&Z, mm-hmm. and that, and it amazed me that some just don't get it, that we're here to help them accomplish something,
right.
And that means working with them, and if we need to mediate between them and the neighbors or finding some solution, and they just don't take advantage of that, and that really works against them. So, Councilman Finder.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with everything you've been saying. Just, I've had two recent experiences, so I'm really interested to hear that other people are having it. Where I think a challenge that we're having is on citizen participation. You know, we have gone to great efforts to make sure there's that outreach to the community by the developer. There's really no check in that system, and the feedback I've been getting is that we'll get a report back from their citizen participation that says, hey, everything's great. Mm-hmm. And yet we hear back at a later period through P&Z or up through the council that it wasn't great. And we don't have any staff that usually goes to those meetings. I've made an effort through our council assistant and others to make sure that we always have somebody there to see if it's truly what we're being told is what the neighborhood is saying. And fortunately, in the recent case, and I let Mayor know about it, everything worked out fine. It was just some communication breakdown and definitely concerns at the but I think that citizen participation, great outreach, we had the right thing in mind, but I think we need to have some oversight in there because I think we might be getting a little mixed messages. So just an observation.
I will get with the planning staff and we'll sort of look at the whole communication process and see if we can't come back with some improvements and how we make sure we're communicating with council members.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Once again, 6C through 6F, anything? All right. Next item on the agenda is a presentation, discuss and provide direction on the La Mesita development project. Mr. Boucher.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm here today to give you an update and seek council direction for the La Mesita project. It's a low-income housing tax credit project. Here's just a quick reminder of the upcoming project timelines. By October 18th, the developer has to have the draft equity documents are due to the state of Arizona, and they also have to have their civil engineering building permits are due so that construction can commence by November 1st. Today I'm here to talk to you about two particular documents. That is the development agreement and the loan agreement associated with the project. I have a couple of quick bullet points that hit on the deal points with the development agreement. La Mesita must meet all the requirements that for the Arizona Department of Housing. Also, the city is in the process of awarding 30 project-based housing vouchers for this project. The city will loan La Mesita $500,000 loan for the project. And again, these document is due by October 18th. For the loan document, It, again, a $500,000 loan. It's a 20-year loan, 0% interest with full payment due at the end of the term of the loan. So it's a one-time payment at year 20.
And Scott, just so there's no misunderstanding, this is not the only component of this arrangement. This is a there's a lot of moving parts in this, which we went over, a month or so ago when, when you gave us the complete. I don't want people out there thinking that this $500,000 loan is the only thing going on. There's property involved. There's other things where the city is made whole on this.
Right. They have already purchased the property from the city previously, so that that property has been purchased, and then there are other loans associated with the development of this project, both a construction loan and then some permanent financing. So this loan here, these two documents are just the documents that are associated with the city and are just a piece of the whole project going together. So the council action that we're seeking today is approval of the development agreement and the loan agreement, and delegating authority to the city manager to modify these documents, not make any substantial changes to them, and that the council is reserving the right that if it is deemed that there are substantial changes that happen between Monday and October 18th, that you reserve the right that those changes have to come back to the council. So with that, I am open for any questions.
And those are specifically the two items that are on the agenda as items 4B and 4C.
As 4B correct? And 4C, that is correct.
Okay. Any questions? All right. That was easy.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds a lot easier than this has been.
No, I know. Well, you know, this is not the first time we've heard this.
Yeah, well, and there's been a lot of, and we just want to thank Scott and the staff because there's been a tremendous amount of work. We found some issues that kind of complicated the transfer of the property with some history with some other cities and be able to work through all that. So I just want to express appreciation.
I'm assuming you have all that resolved with the other cities.
We have now, I believe.
We have signatures from all three cities, and it will be at the next Board of Supervisors meeting for approval. Once we have signature from the Board of Supervisors for the county, all of those issues will be taken care of.
Yeah, now that we've left it out there.
Well,
there were certain encumbrances that were created as part of some grants and some other things years ago that everyone had completely forgotten.
Right.
And so what that did is that when we looked at transferring property, you came up and all of a sudden on the title report, there's all these encumbrances that everyone had forgotten about. And we just had to go through and unwind some of those things that have absolutely zero financial impact.
Right.
It was simply a legal issue because you had somebody else on a title as an encumbrance that really shouldn't be there. It's like getting a release on a loan that was paid off years and years ago. It's the same basic effect. And
right.
So we had to go through and do that paperwork, which sounds easy when you're trying to find your spouse, but it's not so easy when you're dealing with a city entity that has to go through council and go through all this kind of stuff. So is that a quick summary of what we had to deal with?
Except for the spouse part, I'm not sure, but yes.
That's because you've never had this loan document. You have to close a property, and it needs both you and your spouse's signature.
There we go.
And you're calling your spouse saying, the title company closes at 5 o'clock. Where are you? It's 4:45.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Insider discussion.
Thank you.
And I was never one of those that completely memorized my spouse's signature. So I actually had her show up. There was many a time when I was scrambling for Kim to get down to the title company to sign something on a transfer. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to throw that out there. Okay. Oh, well, I knew what I was talking about. Sorry I left the rest of you in the dust. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay. Item 2B, or not 2B. That's good, since we're talking arts and culture. Here, presentation discuss update on the strategic branding review process. Boy, that sounds important. For the Arizona Museum for Youth, better known as AMI.
Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Mayor Smith.
Speaking of spouses, I kept wondering, when I was first here, the one thing I didn't get is everyone kept talking about AMI, and I had never met AMI, and then they finally told me it was the Arizona Museum for Youth.
Yes, and so, I'm not AMI, I'm Sonny O'Rourke, the director of the museum.
I thought you were AMI.
Just to make that clear.
And they said, no, she's Sonny. I said, well, okay, she's at least not a boring contractor.
Thank you.
All right.
Also,
go for
good
it.
Morning to Christopher Brady and also Carrie Kent. I It's a good thing that you started off that way. I'm not sure if, there we go, no. Let's see. What shall I do to bring my PowerPoint up? I have the, sorry, I'm, excuse me for a moment. Thank you, Carrie.
Oh,
there we go. Okay, thank you. Starting again, I would like to mention that I have in the audience several supporters, including our founder, John Whiteman, our chair, Carmen Guerrera, our vice chair, Jennifer Duff, our immediate past chair, Corinne Brooks, and I also would like to acknowledge my two bosses, Cindy Ornstein and Rob Schultz, as well as LaTanya Dorden-Smith, who all have been supportive of the project, and also John Willey of Creative Engine. And we are all here today to update you on our branding process, and I promise I won't read every slide. I know there are a lot of them. But we came before the council over a year ago, and we wanted to update you on where we are in this process and that we are about halfway through. As you are aware, we are the original children's museum focused on art, actually in not only in Arizona but in the country. So we have been a leader, and we came about, as the first slide mentioned, almost 35 years ago. As you began, Mayor Smith, Amy is a name confusion. There are many different reasons, as you can see on the slide, of why we are doing this branding project, including we wanted to acknowledge our strategic competitive advantage over other organizations that have come about, such as the Children's Museum of Phoenix. We have three phases to our project. The first phase we have completed, and we have worked with three excellent consultants. One is Reach Advisors CEO James Chung and also Susie Wilkenberg. They are the go-to firm in the country for museum audience surveys, and they provided us with a wonderful quantitative and qualitative survey that I have. If you'd like to read it, you're welcome to. It's very thick. Phase two is John Willey, Creative Engine, who is now in the process of helping us with our brand strategy. And then phase three is utilizing Steve Carr of Kerr Carr Group, who will help us with a marketing plan. As you can see from the slide, Reach Advisors James Chung does have a lot of qualifications. The research revealed that if we wanted to, we'd be fine maintaining the status quo, but there are challenges and obstacles to growth, as previously mentioned, with the various misinformation about who we are as an institution. We found out that we engage children of all ages, and 78% of our adults who come and visit, they participate with the children. They enjoy it as well. We are artfully different from other children's museums, and the top reason why people visit us is because of our exhibitions. We're excited to know that. The second reason is Artville and then Art Zone. It also revealed that our visitor experience is about cultural engagement and creative passion, which connects with childhood roots. For example, if you went to a museum when you were young, you're more likely to go when you're an adult. It's all about creativity and passing on that passion for culture to children. Our visitors also visit other museums, particularly the Arizona Museum of Natural History right down the street, which is great, libraries, and also live performances such as at the Mesa Arts Center. Our museum actually attracts curious, creative families that love to learn together, and we are a lot of fun, as you probably know, and you've come to visit us, and we're proud of that. We also know the initiative with iMesa and building a better Mesa is very important, and we want to be at the front of that. And so, therefore, we're positioning ourselves to transform to even more so a creative family destination. And also, we want to really, although we know City of Mesa, thanks to the work of the mayor and council and others in the city, is already in the forefront in the nation, and we want to also be engaged and be part of that forefront. So our research is based on really good, solid information, and it allows us to understand our audience. And there's lots of different interview comments that I've included in this presentation, which you can read. But basically, we really do inspire imagination and support creativity and innovative ideas and expression. That's what we're all about. The other interesting thing is many of our exhibits, as you know, from the NASA 50 years of exploration, to Wing It, Things That Fly recently, to Extreme Pets. We utilize the creative arts to look at other different disciplines and avenues. And we're excited about that. And so we know that art, science, and technology is really important to us as well. We also know that that also feeds into creativity, and there's a connector between art, science, and technology. You see here a young child who is experimenting on being a pilot in Wing It. So the differentiation that we have is that there's that higher level of engagement with adults. In fact, at Target Free Sunday, Doug Brimhall emailed me this photo, said, I don't know where the kids are, but we're having a good time. And parents really want to enjoy that experience. And if we have that continued engagement with our parents, then they're more likely to encourage repeat visits and also with their family members and also others. It was very interesting, a previous Target Free Sunday, I was saying goodbye to visitors who came through, and Assuncion Marshall stopped me and said, you know, I really love the museum. My child has come here since she was one, and her child is actually 16 standing before me. And she said, you know what else? I've come here alone. We love that. So we know now through the solid research that we're all about creative families and ultra-curious folks and ultra-curious moms and dads. They really choose us because they have that solid experience. We're not just a babysitting organization where they sit in the corner and work on an iPad or a laptop. And I do also have an article about ultra-curious parents. I'd be more than willing to share that with anyone. And by the way, there are copies of this PowerPoint in the back if anyone would like to take it with you, that Reach Advisors did a huge study on that. And basically, it just says they choose opportunities for learning with their family. We also learn that, unfortunately, you know, there's some not-so-good things you learn from surveys, that we're kind of a white audience. We do have some Hispanics that come to the museum, but we really want to encourage more since, after all, that's right there in our neighborhood. So what is a creative family? And the things that we have to consider you see in the slide here. But it's really more than just painting and drawing. It's also about knitting, woodworking, all sorts of different creative expression. So we want to look at that and say, how can we ramp that up? What's our best brand strategic objective? Well, we need to place our target audience so they can see themselves when they visit. We also want to be engaging in a brand that we feel fits them, and again, based upon that research. So I mentioned John Willey. He can wave again. He's in the audience. We're very pleased that we're utilizing his skill and his firm's through an RFP process. Even though the Friends are mostly funding this portion, we interviewed several different firms, and we appreciate John's ability to give us strategic branding. It's not just about, oh, we want a new logo, isn't that nice? It's really about aligning ourselves with what we present inside the museum as well. He's well known most recently for creating the logo with the Arizona Sci Tech Festival, which we've been a part of. He utilized a new tool, which was unfamiliar to me, but now is, called CrowdSpring. It's a site where you can put a creative project on that site and then have 300 or more graphic designers from around the world give you designs. And we had almost 600, which we went through. Now, I'm sad to admit that we don't have that yet. We haven't finalized it. We're about midway through, and we'll look for opportunities to talk to each of the council members and get feedback. So we will do that. So what are our next steps? We're midway through the process, and we have also just recently spoken to Steve Carr, who's our third consultant. Many of you may be familiar with him, who will help us to create a marketing, communications, and social media campaign, working with myself and the board and also my superiors and LaTanya Jordan-Smith, our marketing director. We need to create a criteria so that it says this is what the brand is and this is what we promise, and we would like to unveil that name at a press conference at the museum in early 2013. We need to, however, close the museum for about a month just to prepare, deep cleaning, presenting some of the things that we're doing, minor renovations, and open June 2013. So what is our AMI 2.0, as we're affectionately calling it, expanded experience? We're all about for your child and the child within you. We are looking at focusing on art always, imagination, design, science, technology, and experience. We're about supporting creative expression. We need to redesign Art Zone and Family Zone. We want an enhanced Artville. For example, we're going to be putting a train in there, not a real one, but one that we'll be building. And also we'll be turning over to our new exhibition after our spring exhibition closes, which is Whether or Not Art with Atmosphere. We want to offer more possibilities to create artfully, and we want to do some things with the building and have the exterior and interior aligned. So I want to thank our project sponsors, the City of Mesa, of course, the Arizona Museum for Youth Friends, and the Virginia G. Piper Charitable Trust, who helped support us with this project. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to take them now.
Okay. Questions? Comments? Councilmember Fenter.
Well, I was just going to offer you my appreciation. I've watched over the years. I had an opportunity to serve, you know, the first couple of years on council, and to see the growth and improvement. I think back just the smart remodeling of the facilities to make it with the new gift center, other things, just lots of great things coming out of Amy and under your leadership and with the great support of your board and others. So appreciate that. This is a new way of thinking things. I remember when the mayor and I met there and we were going through these difficult times, and to see the willingness to be able to think outside the box and do things differently. So yet another example. So excited to see what comes forward.
Thank you, Councilmember Fenter, and we appreciate your service on the board and your continued support of the museum. And also I want to definitely give a shout out to the staff. We have an incredible team at the museum, and we couldn't do it without them, and the board, which we have lots of passionate people, as you can see, sitting behind me about it. So we appreciate that.
Great. Councilmember Richards.
Yes.
I'm a customer.
I know. Yay!
My kids regularly come to the museum and with my wife, and she's always really, we talked about this presentation last night, looking through it together, and she was excited, and some of the comments and stuff are things that she felt as she went to the museum, and so I think your research, at least in our household, was pretty accurate. One of the things that she's really struggled with was why her young mom friends went to the Phoenix Children's Museum or weren't aware of our museum. And so that's something that I'm really excited to see this new brand awareness and marketing to come out to help capture those families in our neighborhood that don't come to this museum, because my wife sings its praises. Her sister that lives in North Phoenix has come down several times and loves the museum as well. But it's that local young ultra mom thing that you're describing, and there's ultra dads out there too.
I did have that in the slide. And you're one of them.
But so I'm excited for this and been looking forward to this for a while, knowing this has been going on. And so good luck, and we're really excited to see when that launches, what it's going to look like. So hopefully we can build some anticipation there.
Thank you, Councilmember Richens, and we appreciate your support, being a member of the museum and visiting. And you're exactly right. That is why we are doing this. There's a lot of folks that live right around the corner that don't know. When they do come, thankfully, they're excited and they want to continue to come. And also with the Children's Museum of Phoenix, we have had patrons say, well, we really love both museums, and we enjoy being a member of both. And one of them said, well, my son in the morning says, Mommy, are we going to the art museum today? Are we going to the play museum today? So they do have a differentiation that we are about art and play. So appreciate that.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Sonny. One of the things that I've learned through my experience in volunteering with the various museums is you can't be static. You are constantly in a state of change because you're constantly searching for your audience. And so you do have to be cutting edge, which Amy always has been. And I'm reminded of last year when the National League of Cities was here in December, that so many mayors and council members either came to the session that Councilmember Glover facilitated or toured the museum or came independently to the museum. And since that time, they took away very positive experiences of the museum and the city and marvel at the creativity and imagination that goes into the process. And so certainly you're continuing that with the board and your consultants to do that, because a museum that stays static will be a closed museum. And so what you're doing is, I think, exceptional. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Kavanaugh. We appreciate your support very much. And also I want to acknowledge Councilmember Glover being on our current board. We appreciate his support as well.
Well, this is exciting. Looking forward to see what you come back with, and really looking forward to Amy 2.0.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. All right, the next item is to acknowledge receipts and minutes of Parks and Rec Advisory Board. I have a motion from Councilmember Higgins, a second from Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Here reports of meetings and conferences attended. Councilmember Glover.
We had a great BSN for the downtown area in Mesa, held at the Mesa Arts Center. I want to thank the Arts Center for the excellent job they did for hosting us, and for Lindsay Belanke for all the work that she did to get the neighborhood involved, and for all the city staff that helped in the planning. And thank all the residents that came and attended the BSN and helped to improve our neighborhood.
And that's 50 cents for two acronyms, but that's okay. Every
You're not the only one to get me, so...
You want to explain what BSN is?
All right, Building Stronger Neighborhoods.
Thank you. All right.
For all those who don't know.
Okay. Anything else? You had something else go on last night. Why don't you report on that, too?
We had a VIP reception at the Benedictine Service Center at 51 East Main. We're very excited. They'll be having the ribbon cutting and blessing today. Sorry I stole your thunder, Mr. Brady, but we're very excited for that as well.
No, it's great. It's really exciting to see the college initiative actually have physical form. I mean, it didn't hit me last night until I'm sitting there actually in the building, and you realize this is real. So it was very cool, and really excited about Benedictine. Albright's already out there actively working. Westminster's in town and getting set up, and then Upper Iowa and Wilkes.
Westminster got their agreement with MCC done.
Yes, just announced that yesterday, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, there's some exciting things happening. And the rest of this week, we'll go over this I'm assuming you'll cover this, Mr. Brady. The five college presidents are in town to meet together and with Dr. Crow and other leaders, Dr. Montoya at ASU. So this is fun. This is really coming to fruition. So we're having a good time. Anything else? Mesa United Way kickoff luncheon yesterday. We certainly appreciate all that they do in our community, and they're just the one of the faces of all the many agencies that that do good work in Mesa. Most of which are based in Mesa. We talked about one today with La Mesita, with a new leaf, Mesa born and reared and functioning, but they cast their shadow clear across the state as a new leaf. We're so excited about their work and all the other many agencies and individuals that provide service. So thanks to the Mesa United Way for pulling together and being a resource to those agencies. Okay. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
All right. I have a motion to adjourn. Councilmember Fenter, second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.